You're listening to Nothing Important. Please enjoy the show.
That's great. That works.
All right, Dave, how's it going, guy?
It's been a good night.
It's been a good night so far, right? Like in Chicago, like had some beers, met with an old friend. We went to Pequod's Pizza.
Pequod's Pizza.
Pequod's fucking pizza, man.
Call me Ishmael, stupid.
Nice. How good was that stuff? Dude, so good, right? Like, see, that's the thing about living in Chicago is like what cracks me up is like, a block away, we have a Pizza Hut, and then like two blocks away, there's a Papa John's, and I, for the life of me, can't figure out who the hell would order that shit when we have places like Pequod's.
Broke people?
Yeah.
Or people that put how much they'll spend on something below how good it is.
Right, but here's the thing about living in Chicago, is even Papa John's will be like 20-something dollars for a pizza.
True.
You know what I mean? Like, so
but they got the garlic butter, man.
Yeah, but they're garlic
overrated. That's
sucks.
One of the most overrated food staples.
Oh, so sides. Gross.
Everybody's like, oh, we gotta get Papa John's because they got garlic butter. And I'm like, you put garlic butter on a turd. I'm not gonna fucking eat that.
Right, exactly. Like,
I gotta dump in a box on market guarantee.
I already don't like melted butter as is.
Oh, I love it.
You like melted butter?
Oh, dude, I've been learning how to make eggs recently.
Yeah.
And, I'm learning how to make eggs, which is funny because every chef video I watch on YouTube and stuff, they always say if they're testing out a new chef, they make him make eggs.
Really?
Yeah.
A lot of technique in it, right?
Yeah. It's like it's the so attention to detail and like, it's something everybody does. So if you do it better than everybody else, I guess would be kind of the thing. So, I've been cooking a lot with olive oil lately. Health conscious, I think. I don't really know, but.
That's supposedly.
So I'm watching, you know, Gordon Ramsay make English style scrambled eggs.
Okay.
And, use real butter.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God. The butter's a game changer, man.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah.
See, I'm not, like, good. Like, if you were to look at me, you'd be like, all right, that fat ass eats a lot of greasy food. But really, in all honesty, like, I don't like grease. I don't like salt. And there's something about melted butter that absolutely grosses me out. So it's like...
So weird.
Like, you ever been to... you ever been to, like, Endless Shrimp at Red Lobster?
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they have, like, Shrimp Mania?
And you get the scampi.
Oh my God. The scampi is like the worst thing. It'll literally make me throw up. I can't do
too much scampi.
No,
no.
Is it because of the melted butter or just because it's like the raw?
When it's like the butter's like a sauce.
Yeah. See,
yeah, it's a little raw.
I can't do that. So when I get like Papa John's and it's the garlic knots or whatever they have, like, and it just comes drenched.
It's 3 day old bread.
Yeah.
Or crust.
It's like crust from old pizzas that people didn't pick up. So they just like, cut the rest of the pizza off, call them breadsticks, and then like, give you like a bunch of greasy-ass garlic butter.
It's like the day-old bread from Jimmy John's. At least I've always respected Jimmy John's for that because they'll just tell you like, hey, this is day-old bread.
They own up to it. Like, see, and you know, Jimmy John's is like gourmet sandwiches. So if you go to Jimmy John's and you say, I want a loaf of bread that was made today, it's like $9.
I never tried that.
But day-old bread, 25 cents on a basket sitting on top of... Sitting on top of the sneeze guard where they put like black olives and lettuce on your shit.
Yeah, and it's actually good. I've purchased it and made a few samis.
No, totally. Like if you go to Jimmy John's and you can get day old bread, it's totally worth the price. But the difference between quote unquote fresh bread and day old bread, you know, like that like 18 hour to 24 hour period.
Right.
It's amazing how it can make the price drop from $8 to 25 cents.
Right.
And same thing with Jimmy John's. It's just old pizza dough they make bread crust out of, slap on a bunch of melty garlic and butter, and now all of a sudden it's a $9 appetizer.
That's right.
I don't like that. So then you go to places like Pequod's where it's all pizza made fresh, and Chicago pizza is awesome. I don't care what you people from New York say. Chicago pizza's the shit.
Pretty ridiculous.
Oh, it's so good.
So it's sloppy.
Yeah, well, that's because it didn't get a chance to congeal. You know what I mean?
But that's what I like about it. Like, they call it a pizza pie, And it is. It's like a pie, and it's supposed to be good and sloppy and just awesome and nasty and delicious.
It is a fucking pie. It's
as my pie. Former classmate used to say, nasty delicious.
Nasty delicious. Like Taco Bell.
Taco Bell is nasty delicious.
Taco Bell takes a lot of flack, right? Especially nowadays where everybody's like, no fast food. McDonald's is dog shit. You know, Taco Bell, it's great F meat. But first off, they don't even grade meat like that.
Great F for go fuck yourself. It's awesome.
Right. Go fuck yourself. Have you ever been to Taco Bell at like 10:30 in the morning when they first open up?
No.
Oh, my God. Get to Taco Bell when they first open up, and the food is amazing.
I would figure it'd be shittier because at the end of the day, it's got all the other ingredients kind of combined in like an iron skillet that you
never
really
clean. Not when they
first
open up. On the end of the day, it's probably worse. But when they first open up and they officially unfreeze the ground beef and pour the packet of spice in and however the hell they mix it, like fresh Taco Bell is awesome. But this is kind of funny. So something I noticed. So previous to 3 weeks ago, I was a stay-at-home dad.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a kid, Christmas Eve. Awesome. She's actually sitting on my lap right now having a bottle. So if you guys hear some baby noises, it's just my little girl, Matilda, making her podcast debut. It's not even her podcast debut because you probably Easter heard her egg. Whining in the background of... probably heard her whining in the background of It's Saul Goodman a couple times.
Yeah.
And other episodes we've done of nothing important. But so I've taken a new job, and you have to take a lunch break at work just for sanity's sake.
Right.
Like a lot of people think that it's because you're hungry, but I think it's because of it's a sanity break.
Makes sense.
Just get away
from
whatever you have to deal with.
Decompress.
Right. Decompress from the previous 4 hours. Yeah. Get ready for the next 4 hours. It's your fucking lunch break.
Focus on breathing through your nose.
Deep breaths.
Through your nose.
Especially if you're hourly. Especially if you're hourly. Like, I'm a salaried person. So to me, it really doesn't matter time-wise, but to an hourly person, you know, they don't want to get paid to put up with the bullshit no matter what your job is. So your lunch break is exactly that. It's a break.
Right.
You clock out in the middle of the day. Nobody can tell you shit to do as long as you aren't sabotaging the business.
Right.
Because that half hour to an hour, whatever your place allows, is your fucking time.
It's you time.
You've been here for 4 hours. You've dealt with all the bullshit. We're going to give you a half an hour break.
That's their time up there. Down here is our time.
It's your fucking time. Down here. Exactly.
Like a goonie in a well, dude. It's your time.
So I'm salaried, but at my new job, but I'll still take a lunch break.
Mm-hmm.
Get off property from where I work, drive around a little bit, and there just so happens to be a Taco Bell maybe like 4 blocks from where I work.
Well, I would think around here there's a Taco Bell 4 blocks from anywhere.
But I don't work here in the city in Chicago. I work out in the suburbs.
That's right.
So the time I go into work is I usually start my day a little bit before 6 a.m. So come around 10:30, I've already been there 4.5 hours. Mm-hmm. I'm hungry because I get up at such a time. It's not worth it to me to eat breakfast. Like, fuck breakfast. I'm not going to cook a fucking egg, although I know that's your big thing right now. I'm not going to cook
eggs
an egg.
Eggs is my jam right now.
Exactly. And where I live in the city, I'm not going to go the 2 blocks out of the way because the traffic is shit to hit up McDonald's and get a fucking breakfast burrito or Egg McMuffin. Or whatever bullshit they're selling.
Are they rocking McSkillet burritos around here?
I don't think they do that anymore. So I get up, I get ready, I go to fucking work. I work till about 10:30, go on break. And it's not uncommon for me to be in the Taco Bell drive-thru right at 10:30 because that's when all the new Taco Bell bullshit for the day is made. And it's fucking amazing.
That's very serendipitous timing.
Indeed. But here's what I've fallen into. Every fast food restaurant has, you can sit inside or you can go through the drive-thru.
Right.
Theoretically, a drive-thru would be for people that, I'm going to go through the drive-thru, I'm going to make my fucking order, and then I'm going to go back to work and sit in the break room.
Right.
But what I feel like happens more and more, especially nowadays, is the drive-thru has pretty much become quicker service for people that just don't want to sit in the fucking lobby. So they'll park right outside, right? Oh, yeah. So you make like the little loop, you go up to one of like two or three or four or however the fuck many drive-thrus they have nowadays.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's funny. They only have like one or two windows, but they'll have like four fucking stations where you can make your order.
So let's take in our orders twice as fast as we can put out the end of the order.
Right, yeah. Like, there's still a traffic jam. I think what it does is it makes you feel like you're moving.
Yeah.
Because you get to make your order, and although there's still only one window, so you'll still sit there forever.
Yeah, it's like the people in our town who the bridge is under construction. There's one bridge across town. Mm-hmm. It's under construction. It'll set you back about 15 minutes max. They'll drive 20 minutes out of the way just because they feel like they're moving.
Right, yeah. You're doing something. Instead of just in there, you're making progress. It's pretty much.
You're wasting a lot. Yeah, anyway.
So I've noticed that I'm totally one of those guys. I'll go through the drive-thru just to pull back around and park in a parking spot. Like, oh, it's kind of next to the dumpster, but it's still under the tree. So there's a little bit of shade for me, but I don't have to sit in the lobby in the uncomfortable ass plastic chairs.
Right.
And I feel like one of the one of the most shameful moments of the average person's daily life is when they pull around and they park in the parking spot, you unwrap from like the shittiest grade tinfoil you can muster with like the Taco Bell logo inside, you unwrap it and you get ready to eat your grilled steak burrito and you're all excited. And right before it hits your mouth, you just happen to glance up and then you make eye contact with somebody two parking spaces over doing the same thing. And it's more awkward than it has to be.
Okay.
To me is like the fast food equivalent of going to a sporting event and standing in the urinal next to somebody when all the other urinals are open. It's like, okay, we're both doing the same thing, but you're so uncomfortably connected.
Right. It's like mutual shame.
Right.
In your eyes.
Like, I'm in my Jeep and I'm totally going to get fat and I'm going to eat this big ass burrito. And right before I take a chomp, I look at another guy who's also in a suit and tie, like in a Lexus, at the very same moment, about ready to take the burrito. And then our eyes connect. And then it's the most awkward.
You just see yourself in each other.
Right.
Which, this is why I'm laughing so hard. Because Taco Bell, I've hidden up many a drive-thru myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go inside to get my food.
Right.
If I'm by myself and I'm getting fast food, I don't give a shit. If I have 24 hours to kill, I will hit up the drive-thru and I will eat in my car while I'm driving.
Okay.
But you cannot eat a taco in Taco Bell.
It's impossible.
I have to get, every time I go to Taco Bell, a double-decker Taco Supreme and a seven-layer burrito.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fine. The burrito's fine. The double-decker, you can't eat while you're driving. So I always pull off and park in the parking lot and eat Taco Bell. Uh-huh. Unless I see another car.
And then you'll avoid, right?
I will drive to another parking lot somewhere else and eat my Taco Bell because I don't want that moment because I know it's coming.
Like, if there's a mall adjacent to you, you'll park farthest away from the mall, but still in the parking lot where there's, like, no car.
I'll pull into a Sonic, and then they're like, can I help you? And I'll be like, no, I'm good. I'm already eating Taco Bell.
Right. That's the beauty of it. Yeah, you pull into a Sonic, and you might make eye contact with somebody, but They're fucking eating Sonic.
Yeah, they're eating Sonic.
So I'm not like you. I'm eating Taco Bell. I commuted over here. Like, that was by choice.
Once I start eating, I don't look up. Swear to God. Once I open that first taco and I'm like, it's game time. We're going to fucking demolish this thing. I don't look up until I'm done. And I'll look up and see another car and just be like, they might have saw me.
I liken to eating your food in your car in the parking lot of the place where you just bought it and making eye contact with somebody doing the same thing. To me, that's like if you have a roommate and you wake up in the morning and start jerking off. Okay. And then you happen to look over and then your roommate's jerking off on the couch because they didn't realize you were awake.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go. There's a good segment. But like, I totally felt like
14 minutes. It's
that,
perfect.
That is honest to God truth. Like the other day I was seriously at Taco Bell and I got like a fucking taco and shit and I'm eating it. I'm like, man, this is really good. Cause Taco Bell first thing is fucking amazing. And then I'm like me and this guy just both looked at each other. And then just like when you make eye contacts with a dog and like, you know, like it's licking itself, you're just like,
it'll stop.
Like, where do we go from here?
Right.
That's exactly it.
Where do we go from here?
Yeah.
Just keep eating, dude.
You're listening to Nothing Important.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the Someone Important Hotline, we have Terry Dale Parks, who plays Jim Webb on the Astronaut Wives Club on ABC. He's also in the new Terminator movie coming up and Maze Runner sequel. Terry, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. Great to be here, man.
No, glad to have you. First off, I want to start with, is it possible for you to be in any more projects this year?
Well, you know, hey, we could probably squeeze in a few more here and there. You know, I like to stay busy.
You do. I'm looking at your IMDb, and it's just that you're everywhere.
Extensive.
This year.
It's extensive.
It's called attention deficit disorder.
Well, that's good. You're using it to your benefit, right?
It's been a great big benefit. Without it, I don't know where I'd be today. I'll be honest with you. That's the guy's on a trip.
So when you go, how many, me and Dave, before we get into the meat of it, Dave and I always ask about audition processes and such, and somebody who's as prolific as you are, and you're just everywhere, how do you audition? How do you prepare for all these different auditions for all these different roles?
I'll tell you, that's a really, really, really good question. I honestly, sometimes... Even my wife, well, I'm lucky I married above my pay grade, and my wife is fantastic, and Dave helped me with some of these auditions, which is great, because you are constantly cramming an incredible amount of information in the noggin and trying to regurgitate that information in some kind of sensible way, and then forgetting it as fast as possible so that you can cram more information in your brain. And so, yeah, that really becomes, after a while, it really becomes strenuous when you start to audition and audition, that you're constantly cramming information, you know, in there. And then you'll know there'll be parts I'll read for that I didn't get, and I'll, like, be sitting in a movie theater somewhere, and I don't even remember that I've read or auditioned for some project, and I'll hear the actor on the screen, for instance, this happened to me in the Boyhood movie. And watching the actor on the screen, I thought, gosh, this sounds really familiar. And it turns out that, like, I don't know, 12 years ago, I auditioned for that one of the roles on there. And I'm looking at this guy going, how do I remember this? And it's amazing what I do remember of some of those auditions. And then you'll hear it back, and you're like, how do I remember this? And then, you know, sometimes it pans out, and you end up working on the project. Sometimes it doesn't pan out. But, yeah, it does get to be quite a strain on the old brain, especially now that I'm in my 40s. I'll cram all of that information in there and then regurgitate it. Remember that I'm acting as well. So that's a great question.
Yeah, I sometimes think when I see somebody with such a long list of roles and such, I like project myself at that a little bit. One of the reasons, besides the obvious lack of talent, that I couldn't be an actor would be that, like for example, I was a stay-at-home dad for 7 months. And I would land a job interview when I was ready to go back to work. And like a week out, I started like, you know, kind of getting amped up for the for the job interview and such, you know, and that like happens to me like once every few years. I couldn't imagine auditioning like several times a month or even several times a year. That's incredible to me.
Yeah, Well, I tell you, I recently became a dad myself, about 19 months ago.
Congratulations.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. I have to tell you, I understand exactly what you're going through because, you know, I can't imagine what my wife has to go through with her, with, you know, but basically the strain on your brain that, you know, chasing down with a 19-month-old little boy. Chasing around this 19-month-old, you know, little boy, and there are things that I used to remember in my life that I can't remember anymore. I don't have time to remember. I don't even know what happened to that brain cell. I can totally relate to that because it's hard to, you know, get your brain back into, like, rewired into that mode, you know.
Right. Absolutely. Like, I'll be working and go on vacation for like a week, come back and feel like I've never actually been at that job before. So I can only imagine when you have such a wide range of roles. So you play Jim Webb in the Asking Out Wives Club. How did you go about preparing for that role? Because Jim Webb was a real true to life person.
Yeah, it's true. And you know, of course, one of the first things you do is you research, you know, who the guy was and what he did and all this, which is pretty fascinating because, you know, this was a guy that was in charge of, he was a government official that was in charge of what NASA did and when they did it and their funding and yada, yada, yada. And for that reason, wasn't often very well liked by the people that were working in NASA, astronauts, you know, people that were, you know, actually working on the missions. You definitely, there's that research side of it, but then in the end, what you have to try to remember the most to do is marry, you know, who you are really with who that person kind of was. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, the greatest character you ever create is yourself, and that's true of anything. And, you know, it is Jim Webb, but it's me at the same time. So, it's my version of Jim Webb. How about that?
Well, I when you're preparing to play somebody who has some like legit historical context, which he did, did NASA help you at all? Did they help you with like any maybe background information or documents? Did they give you anything that maybe you couldn't see like in a typical museum to prepare for the role? Because I'm assuming they would have a stake in its accuracy as well, or are they just not involved at all?
Well, I don't know. NASA, I'm sure NASA has better things to do than to worry about my acting career. But I understand what you're saying. You know, in the sense that I was able to access NASA information like, from you know, about the person that NASA had allowed out on the comes to the World Wide Web. I guess they helped in that way. I think they were having a bigger problem trying to figure out what was going on with ending their space shuttle program at the time. So
right. I guess that was actually the crux of my question is when you play somebody such as this and you're like, hey, you know, I'm playing the Jim Webb. I would like to speak to somebody. Maybe you guys can give me a little bit of insight. I was just wondering if you approached it like that or you just did research like at a library and where you could find it and pull the character from that.
Well, it was pretty much wherever I could find it. And also, you know, the writers on the Astronaut Wives are extremely intelligent and well-versed too, and they had a lot of insight into who this guy was, and I'm sure that theirs was more based in the actual things that and what, you know, from NASA and the people that knew this person. And you know, the Astronaut Wives Club itself is a story that's based on a series of books. There are more books, and I'm drawing a blank as to the author, but the lady that was that actually lived during the time and had involvement so there's a lot of things that are that historically that she wrote about that, you know, that I mean she wrote about things that actually happened in their lives and so it's a very true account, and the writers in the story, I think by virtue of being true to the story that was written, I kind of naturally was true to who Jim Webb was, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And the author was Lily Koppel.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Lily Koppel.
Have you heard any of her reactions to the series thus far? I know there's only been two episodes aired, so I'm not really sure where you can go from there, but like, have you heard any of her reactions to the series?
No, it's funny. No, I have not. Not any. I've actually looked, but I have not heard. No. I would be really interested to know. Really I could imagine she would feel flattered in some way that her story is being told.
Absolutely. I'd invite her on, but I'm not sure if she'd want to come on.
You never know. We get surprised sometimes.
That's true. So you mentioned the wives and some of the people that were actually the actual people that were around during that time. What has been their reaction? Have they been like incredibly helpful, or are they kind of indifferent? Or because I would assume that there's such an integral part of history, and this really is their story about what they went through and how they handled all the craziness. And you know, nowadays space travel seems so trivial and elementary, and it's not at all. People forget all the crazy math and everything that goes into it. And back then it was, you know, we were fighting the Soviets and you know, like trying to show them up and face constant embarrassment. Have you heard anything from the wives and such?
I'd be lying if I said I had. I really don't know any of their reactions, and I don't think that anyone's really come forth and been really vocal about how they feel about it or what they think about it. I don't think anybody's portrayed in any kind of light that's not flattering. So, you know, I think they probably would you're pretty interested in how this story, to see how this story is kind of unfolding too. Because I think it'd be kind of neat to see a story about the story of your own life, just to see
see somebody else's interpretation of the story of your life, basically.
Right. Yeah, I know. Right. To see how someone could possibly interpret this, because it can't possibly be, you know, and there's no way that someone can interpret my life 30 years from now and be 100% accurate, you know?
Right.
Well, two episodes of it.
It happened, by the way. I would hate for someone to try to interpret my life 30 years.
I watched the first two episodes, and it's funny how you mentioned the interpretation, because there's so much going on with the series, and especially trying for historical accuracy and such. And then in the second episode, where you grounded his name escapes me, but the character, when you tried to ground the astronaut,
Alan Shepard.
Yeah. And I was watching that. I'm like, you know what? They're kind of trying to set him up to be the villain, but this is real life. There isn't really a villain. You know, Jim Webb just, right. You know, like you said earlier, he was running NASA. He had to be stern.
Mm-hmm. He was a guy doing a job, and it was a time when there was a space race going on. You know, it was us and the Soviets, and you know, there was a definite agenda on the part of the government to get us up in space first and into the moon. You know, so you know, it was a time when there were villains and heroes. Everybody was a little of both, you know. You think about these guys that were, you know, these astronauts of the, you know, in the 60s. These guys really were looked at by the American public, and I'm talking about men, women, and older generations. These guys were looked at like superheroes at the time. They were doing something that no one ever believed possible, you know, before we set foot on the moon. They did something that a generation before them thought would never ever happen.
Yeah. The whole space thing just it still boggles my mind today. A few years ago, not even that long ago, I lived in Florida, and before they ended the current shuttle program, I remember standing on the beach, you know, on the Atlantic coast, in Daytona Beach, Florida, which is just south of Cocoa Beach, and watching the shuttles and the rockets go up, and you'd see them go up, and you could stand on the coast for a few minutes, and then the sound waves would eventually make its way down. And you know, it's awe-inspiring nowadays. If anybody listening out there never got a chance to see a shuttle launch, it's absolutely amazing and breathtaking. And watching the Astronaut Wives Club, I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, wow, back then, like, it blows my mind so much now. I couldn't even imagine what it would be like back then when it was literally thought impossible.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's one of the things I regret, is never being able to see it, one of the space shuttles launch. We tried, actually, you know, to see one of the last few launches of it, my wife and I, and we never had time to get down and actually make it happen. Everyone I've ever heard say anything about watching the space shuttles, it had to be, you know, it was great. And so imagine, you know, you think you're saying, like, these huge rockets, you know, that people had never seen before in their lives, you know, shooting off the coast and into space. It must have been, I can't even imagine what that probably felt like to people, you know, what they... There's nothing in their imagination to let them have anything to relate to that. And it wasn't a time when we were going to movie theaters every weekend and seeing the Avengers or, you know, things like that. It's a different time. It's a totally different time. It was a time when Star Trek had a hard time staying on the air, so people thought it was crazy.
Right, you know, and this is the story of the wives and how it must have felt, because, you know, they have their husbands and their boyfriends and brothers and such, like, you know, in these cockpits, you know, riding, you know, tons of diesel fuel or rocket fuel towards the stars, you know, and there was no internet, no instantaneous communication. All you had was like local television news that would get information from NASA via the wire.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's a pretty amazing time, and that's why I really do feel like those guys were. Those men that did that, and, you know, some of them to tragic ends, you know.
Yeah.
They really were, at the time, looked at as superheroes, and they really were heroes.
Yeah, it's just amazing. So, it's, I don't even know how to describe it. Just like, because you never got to see the shuttle, but like when it comes in and it goes through, like, just to see what those women went through is just absolutely. Just absolutely phenomenal, and you know, a testament to their strength. So I'm sure you got to be very proud that you're part of essentially the documentation of their stories.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot too of I don't have any kind of relation directly, but about 2 weeks before the Challenger explosion, when I was a kid in school, we had a lady come speak to our assembly, come speak to our whole school, K-12. And she was the second runner-up for the Teacher in Space program. I don't know if you remember, but one of the people that was killed in the Challenger...
was a teacher, yeah.
Yeah, and so when that happened, and I can remember exactly what class I was sitting in, and of course everybody, when that happened, we had a really close relationship to it because of this teacher that had come in and spoken to us, who was second runner-up. And so for us, it was a lot more, I think the kind of dramatic trauma of it was a lot more intense just because we had that link to it. So I can't imagine what it was like for people who were watching their husbands, you know, their wives later on.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm a fan of the show. I'm definitely going to be watching it, going forward. It's very well put together. I can't wait to see, you know, your further portrayals of Jim Webb. And before I let you go, what is your favorite frozen pizza?
Frozen pizza, the last I had was DiGiorno's. And I would say that was my favorite frozen pizza.
DiGiorno's, all right. I think we've gotten that answer before.
No, I think that's the first DiGiorno's, actually.
Is that the first DiGiorno's? Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, last time we asked a a musician who goes by the name of MC Frontalot, we asked him that question, and it was like almost like we insulted him with how dumb that question is.
Well, hey, you know what? When you are hungry and it's midnight and all there is frozen pizza, what are you going to do?
You're fire up right? that oven, man, and throw it in.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, Terry, thank you so much for coming on the Nothing Important podcast. It's been incredibly awesome to talk to you, and I hope you come back and chat with us in the future.
Oh, I'd love to. That'd be great. It'd be great talking to you guys.
Thanks a lot, Terry.
Great talking to you. Thank you, Terry.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one.